Welcome to the Seven Figure Leaders podcast. This podcast was created to celebrate the success stories of seven-figure business owners, giving them a platform to share their insights and lessons learned in order to inspire other business owners. As well as that, it's an opportunity to build new connections. So if you're a seven-figure business owner or someone who works with seven-figure business owners, and you're looking for introductions to potential stakeholders, strategic partners, and clients, I'd love to hear from you or have you on as a guest and see if I can help make those connections for you. Just go to synergycfosolutions.co. That's synergycfosolutions.co and click podcast. And there you'll find the link to apply. Welcome. And today we've got Neil Ackroyd of Precision Corporate Finance. Welcome, Neil.
Hi.
So why don't you give us a bit of a background as to who you are and what you do?
As you say, my name's Neil Ackroyd. I am a professional corporate financier. So I've spent most of my career helping people buy and sell companies or buying and selling companies myself. I have a qualified at KPMG as a chartered accountant, but I'm one of those, you know, people who've been an accountant for 20 years, but has never actually entered a single accounting journal in my entire life. So I kind of did the qualification and then immediately went off and started advising people on buying and selling companies. And that's essentially what I've done now for, I guess, I qualified 25 years ago. So you can tell with the gray hair. Yeah. I'd like to describe myself as a surfer, but I'm better at corporate finance.
Okay, fair enough.
Quite a long way.
So any particular sector that you focus on or that you have focused on over the years?
Over the years, we've had little niches, I guess, here and there, but I think I pride ourselves on being a generalist. Like I always think that it's that our specialism is in buying and selling companies and the process of that and the negotiation around that and getting the deals done, which in itself is a specialization. And I think with a few exceptions, specific sector specialists were always a little bit OTT, but also increasingly now with the way AI is changing our space, I think it's becoming completely obsolete to be a specialist advisor. I always kind of thought, because a lot of the job that we do, certainly in selling businesses, is in finding buyers, I quite often think that people who are very knowledgeable in a sector space, because it doesn't really matter whether I know how your business operates, because you know that, like, incredibly well by all accounts, because you'd be a very profitable business if we're advising you. So I'm not going to teach you anything about how your business operates. I'm not a consultant. So it's really about finding buyers. And I think a large part of finding buyers is not having any predetermined ideas about who might want to buy a business or might not. And therefore, it's slightly better if you start from a clean sheet of paper and do research from the ground up. And how that works is that's changing now is with the kind of massive explosion of the competence of AI, let's say, we used to employ very highly skilled analysts, and they take 5 to 6 weeks to put together a research report, including contacting relevant people vet and screening calls and what we call acquisition criteria calls, where you phone somebody up and do. But you'd have a couple of hundred companies built from pools of potential purchasers, and that'd be
clarify. Do you only support on the sell side? You work for the buyer? Seller.
No. Well, we don't largely do acquisition work, but mostly because it's hard to. We do management buyouts, so we advise on management buyouts. Corporate acquisition work is very difficult, I think, because it's very difficult to align yourself on a fee basis with your client. So the only time we really do that is where I might join the board as a non-exec director for a few years and guide that process with some sort of mix of fees and equity or some sort of success fee based on the progress the business makes forward. Anyway, so what I was saying about AI, is that so it takes 3 weeks to get that list, to do all of the paper-based research, and these are very expensive people. Take 3 weeks to get that list down to 40 or 50 companies that you could screen with an acquisition criteria call, and then 2 weeks to screen it with an acquisition criteria call, and then you've got the report with 8 to 10 people you can go to rifle shot to try and sell a business. AI could do that 3 week process in 20 minutes, and they'll do it better as well. And that's not no disrespect to the people we were hiring. We were hiring some very good people. We've still got the same people, but they're just doing the 2 weeks at the end, which is kind of the interesting, you know, they'll
engage calls with the potential buyers.
Yeah, exactly. So that scouring the market, make sure you're not missing anybody, and then whittling the list down by what have they said in the public domain, whether they said they don't want to acquire businesses, or they do like this space, they don't like that space. All of that was 3 weeks, is now 20 minutes, with a day for the, and it's a day where they're sat on a sofa with some paper, probably smoking a cigarette, you know, so you can't do that inside anymore. So it's crazy what AI is doing, and AI will do it better, that job, as long as it's checked at the end. They'll do it better than a specialist in the sector. So, which is why I say kind of sector specialisms are getting a little bit obsolete, I think, because AI can do ground up research so well. Mm. I mean, obviously it has clangers and, you know, does things wrong, but that's why you need somebody to come in and check it and logic check it at the end. But if you do that, then it's unbelievable what it can do.
Right. Okay. And so what do you think the future of this industry is, i.e. your industry, with the growth of AI?
I did say in the precursor to this, I'm happy to work at, have a chat about the way the world works. We're going to talk about some completely different stuff to what we talked about before. I think that I'm going to get myself sued now. The biggest problem with it depends how you define the market, right? So the vast majority of businesses that are owned in the UK are small, right? But the corporate finance advisory space is, let's say it has three tranches, right? The big tranche, which is incredibly well-paid investment bankers at very large global investment funds putting together mergers, but Elon Musk buying X, for example, or Twitter, you know, just massive deals, big telecoms companies putting themselves together. And these people have a certain skill set and they do something and they do it very, very well, but they don't get very granular because you can't, because it's all based on macroeconomics. And I guess that's probably the difference between the first one and the second one, is that the first one is all macroeconomic M&A, let's say. And then the second tier is microeconomic M&A, but it's still big. You're still talking about 300-400 million deals down to about 50 or 60. So these are decent size, you know, the larger of the SMEs or the M of SMEs to smallish large companies, but small enough that they're just in one space or one area. And, you know, they're a few hundred million pound deals. And those guys get into a lot more of the detail. And that's the space I came out of, where you are a lead advisor and you've got all the qualifications and you've got MBAs and all the staff are very, very expensive and the deals are all done very, very well and very professionally. And then you get into the smaller deal space, where some of the people like myself have migrated down into that and said, well, look, we can do that level of service for these smaller deals. And you can, to a certain scale. But that space, that below, I'd say probably 20, 25 million of deal value, is completely dominated by corporate finance brokers. And I would say, this is where I get sued, corporate finance brokers have, their business model is not selling businesses. Their business model is that of a printing firm, but in the age of where you've stopped printing anything, and therefore all they're doing is producing digital IMs. One of them listed a few years ago and claimed that their deal percentage completion rate was 7%. That was their boast. So 93% of their clients aren't selling. And the problem is, how does that business carry on? The problem is that no owner manager ever gossips about selling their business until they've sold their business. And even then, they're very cagey about it. And my theory is that the brainwave patterns of an owner manager thinking about selling their business is the same as a spouse thinking about infidelity, right? And so I think if you hook those two people up to a brain scan and looked at the areas of the brain when you start saying, are you thinking about cheating on your spouse or are you thinking about selling your business? I think the same bits of the brain would fire. I think they'd have the same fears and the same, because they certainly have the same behavior. They're incredibly cagey. They don't want to talk about it. They never gossip about it. And it makes sense, because if you, especially if you've got a small business, you think about selling it, your fear is, you know, my staff are all going to hate me, my customers will leave, my suppliers. So the confidentiality is off the scale, worse than any other thing. And what that means is that these brokers can operate a bit like a brothel in a village where all the prostitutes have got sexually transmitted diseases. You'd think it'd go out of business because people would tell each other, but they don't, because nobody ever talks about going to a brothel and nobody ever talks about getting a sexually transmitted disease from a brothel. So that's the market that we operate in. Right. So that's quite a big precursor to your question. I haven't forgotten your question. Donald Trump swerve back to the original question, which is, I think the way AI will change it is that, so the problem, the reason that people like myself don't take over from the brokers is because the brokers, it's under a certain deal value, it's not economical to have somebody as expensive as me and as my team advising on a deal. But what you need is, you need essentially a brain, you need intelligence and nuance to be able to direct the transaction in one way or the other. And that space is filled by the brokers who aren't really trying to sell businesses. They're just trying to sell IMs. They're making money out of the commitment fees, and they make so much money out of that, they don't actually really care whether the deals go through. That's where I probably get sued, because I don't know whether they care or not, but they certainly don't look like they care whether the deals go through. And if they do, they're not very good at getting what they care done. So it's not scalable, and it's not profitable for people from this space to come down and do it. And the people from this space, it's way more profitable and way more scalable to just not bother and just try and essentially scam 20,000 quid off each client and then have a complaints department. And because of the imperfect information around, nobody, there's no word of mouth, there's like literally no TripAdvisor, then you can complete operating in that way where everybody knows that you're not doing the job. And it all, it's a new set of customers in a new market every year. So it just keeps on going. So what will AI do? Well, I think AI will be able to create an interface where somebody will be able to go after the brokers and do a decent job. And it won't be cost prohibitive, and you won't need a £300,000-£400,000 a year deal leader to run those deals. That'll be replaced by AI, with somebody who is reasonably intelligent just being able to logic check the decisions that people make on selling the businesses. But I don't think that'll happen in a decade or more, but I think that's where it'll go.
Yeah, interesting. So do you think the reason that the businesses under the brokers are covering, do you think the reason those businesses are not selling is because the brokers are doing a bad job, or because the businesses are unsellable and no one wants to buy them?
Well, that's a fantastic question, and I think it's the second. I spent years, and in fact, I started Corporate Finance TV as a business years ago because I was so cross with the brokers for cynically doing the wrong thing. And then more recently, I think I've realized that actually, and it comes to what we were talking about before about followers, quasi leaders and leaders, is there aren't enough leaders. There aren't enough people who are just comfortable making decisions that want to buy these businesses, and therefore anything. So the big truth we try to push out, and we do it through our quiz tool, is if your business isn't making $1 million, if there's one takeaway that anybody who's an owner manager who's listening to this should take, I think if you haven't got $1 million of EBIT, of earnings before interest and tax, your business can't be sold. Unless you're a dentist or a doctor or a lawyer or a wealth manager, like financial planning. There are certain niches where you can just pick the GP up and plonk it anywhere. Outside of that, vast majority of business, you don't have a million EBIT, you can't be sold. And the reason for that is because there aren't enough people who are capable of running those businesses on their own that want to. And the ones who can buy bigger businesses. So if you look at the two main buyers outside of individuals who would buy a business, one is trade, and you know, this is corporates coming and hoovering things up. They're only interested in businesses that fill a niche in their plan. So they'll do the big macro deals where they're putting together two big corporates. But in terms of smaller acquisitions, they want something that will bolt into a geographic niche somewhere, or a trading niche somewhere. But even then, they have so many, let's say, quasi leaders in their M&A team that it costs them £1 million just to do a deal of internal costs and, you know, lawyers and all that sort of, and nobody wants to take any risks. So they get due diligence up the jacksie from KPMI or Bob at KPMG or wherever. So it costs them, let's say it costs them £1 million to do a deal. They're not going to do a deal that's less than £2 or 3 million in a million years. So they're out if you've got a smaller business, pretty much all of them, unless you're very lucky. And private equity, well, private equity make their money based on 2% of the funds they're managing plus 20% of the, as a rule. So they'll make, so if you've got a 100 million fund, they'll take 2% of that a year, and then they'll take 20% of the uplift when the fund closes years down the line. They've doubled the money, they'll take £40 million. Right. But the 100 million is a tiny fund, like really quite a small fund. But so they've got 2 million a year of operating money. Well, that isn't a lot of professional corporate financiers, sad to say. And they've got to deploy all of that 100 million pounds. So even if you offer them a deal that's £1 million, and they're going to leverage it as well, so they'll put debt in it, they'll be like, well, I can't do 100 deals. I can't do 100 deals to deploy a fund. So they'll have a minimum, and typically their minimum is 5 million. For the smaller funds, is a 5 million equity check, which they'll then leverage. So that'll be 10 million quid, which is actually interesting. So PwC did a report in 2023 that said that 3,700 businesses in 2023 were sold. And I don't know why they don't put this in the report, or at least I didn't read it in the report. They put in the total amount that they were sold for, but they didn't divide one number by the other and say what the average deal value is. So I did that maths myself. And the average was £10 million. So if over 3,700 deals, the average is £10 million, that tail isn't going to be that long. It certainly isn't going to be going into hundreds of thousands very often.
Yeah.
Because there really aren't that many by number that are billions.
Yeah,
half a dozen in a year, maybe, in the UK. So I think that's really interesting. I mean, the other part of that stat, by the way, is that, coming back to your question of why the businesses don't sell, in that same year, just over 20,000 businesses were liquidated. Now, bearing in mind, you don't need to liquidate a business if you don't have net assets of more than 25,000 quid. So That doesn't include ones that you just let die and didn't do the paperwork and it got closed. These or just wrote to, if you do it properly, wrote to company's house and said, strike it off. It's got less than 25,000. So these are the ones that needed an insolvency procedure, either a member's voluntary liquidation for a solvent business or a creditor's voluntary liquidation. And it splits about half and half. So of those 20-something thousand, low 20,000s, just over 10,000 were members' voluntary liquidations. So these are businesses that are solvent, that are making money, paying their bills, and have net assets, that just closed. And they had, at the end, more than 25,000 in assets because they had to, otherwise they wouldn't need an MVL. And then the other half were creditors' voluntary liquidation. So what does that all mean? That means that you're seven times more likely to liquidate your business than sell it for value. And the average of the ones who sell it for value is £10 million, which doesn't paint a very good picture for that small deal market of, if a broker turns around and says, "Oh, you've got 300,000 in profit," that means your business is worth 2 million quid because you can get 7 times. It's just bullshit. It's not true. It's fundamentally, it's just an out and out lie. That business, that 300 grand business, is heading towards a members voluntary liquidation if you ever want to get out of the business or not just work until you die. And then somebody who inherits it from your members voluntary liquidation liquidate it at the end.
Okay, so there's a lot to unpack there. So, so what are you focused on then? What's the focus of your business for 2025 and going into 2026 and the next few years? Like, what are you trying to grow and which types of business are you trying to help if it's not a particular sector?
We're just the focus for us is I guess twofold. We're focusing on getting our quiz out, which has can I sell my business and should I sell my business? So it works more on the psychological aspects of why owners start businesses and what it looks like when they're ready to sell, which they're often not aware of. We're pushing that out. So we're really just trying to get as many owner on the Precision Corporate Finance side. We're just trying to get as many owner managers free, because that's what we talk about. The quiz is all based on the idea that owner managers only start businesses because they absolutely need the freedom in a way that other people don't, and they only sell because that freedom's moved outside the business, and then they're essentially in a prison because you can't just retire. There's nobody to phone and ask for your gold watch. So we're focused on just getting on just, you know, getting deals done, getting people the retirement that they deserve on that side in businesses that are north of a million profit, typically, you know, a couple of million plus, and just giving them the best service that they have essentially earned over their years of sacrifice for, you know, their business and their staff. And, you know, I'm quite a big fan of owner managers. So that's what we're focused on. We're doing that largely through the quiz tool. So we're getting wealth managers to get their clients to fill in the quiz. And at the end of it, it says your freedom lies inside or outside. And, you know, vast majority, it's still inside. For those it's outside, it categorizes it into which grouping. And it just helps them. And then the second thing the quiz does is it tells owner managers the truth, which is the truth that we've just discussed, which is if you don't have a million EBIT. So even if your freedom's still inside your business, don't be making a retirement plan that's based on getting 3 million quid for your £500,000 EBIT business. It's not going to happen. You need to either grow, or you need to save, or you need to do something else that isn't just relying on that. So that's where we're focused. We're just focused on pushing that out there and obviously just closing the deals that come to us.
Okay, brilliant. Well, perhaps if we could get a copy of that quiz, we'll put it in the show notes of the podcast.
Yeah.
And anyone who listens who's interested in you know, having a look at that, then they'll fill that in.
No, that's perfect. Absolutely.
Anything else you want to share before we close it out?
Not really. I mean, we haven't really talked about the buying businesses bit, but you know,
I think we need to do a part two for that. Or if there's something you want to go over now,
I mean the other side of the business is what we call retire today or retire tomorrow, which is very much aimed at the businesses that where the owner manager has got to that point where they desperately need. I when I do face-to-face seminars, I talk about the sunshine to suicide journey, and what I mean by that is the owner manager, they'll start a business because they need freedom. The business will give them the freedom they want, and then they'll just keep merrily skipping along with their freedom, and they'll get in their car every morning, driving, they'll just sunshine, it'll just be there, glorious. And then one day they'll wake up and go like, I don't want to do this for various different reasons. I'm a little bit less happy today, like the sun's shining a little bit less and I'm a little bit more bothered. And then if they ignore that, it gets all the way to, you know what, I'm going to put a shotgun in my mouth and see whether I can reach the trigger. So I talk about that sunshine to suicide. And it depends, when you meet an owner manager who wants to sell, how far down that spectrum are they? Because they do get, I mean, I shouldn't really joke about suicide, but they do get pretty close to like, I cannot work another day. And if they are at that, I cannot work another day, and their business just isn't saleable, then that's where kind of Retire Today or Retire Tomorrow, which is our transitional investments brand, comes in and says, look, there's two routes to go. One is that if your business is just too small and it has to close, we'll save you that year of closing it down before you do an MVL and just let you go now. Just give us the business, we'll do it, and we'll do all of the closed down, we'll get you out of all of the leases. It's essentially a solvent administration, which is a product, bizarrely, that the insolvency world doesn't offer. And then the second one is, okay, you've got a business that is kind of sustainable, but is maybe over-reliant on you or over-reliant on individual contracts, and therefore it's too risky for anybody to buy, but we'll come in and structure something to take over it, and we'll protect that legacy, and we'll make it a lot better than the MVL you would otherwise be heading for. So you get more out of it, but you're not going to get a premium price, but we'll take the risk. We'll put in a quasi leader and we'll drive that business forward. And that's Retire Today, Retire Tomorrow, because obviously Retire Tomorrow takes, well, it's still, the deals still get done in 3 weeks, but Retire Today, where it's just going to an MVL, can get done in 24 hours.
Right. Retire Tomorrow, that only takes 3 weeks.
Yeah. That's like the whole basis of it is that we're not going to do due diligence. So the idea is, of those 20,000 businesses that get liquidated every year, because 2023 wasn't a really special year, think of the amount of IP, the amount of jobs, the amount of stuff that the economy is losing in doing that. So the mission statement of Retire Tomorrow is, if we can, how many of those businesses can we save? And the limiting factor to how many businesses you can save is whether or not you have to do due diligence. So if we sit there and say to the owner manager, we'll buy it, but we're going to buy it for essentially a pound today, and then we'll structure something over time, and we'll get the legal sorted out so that you can be guaranteed, we've got a very good reputation anyway, but you can be guaranteed that we can't do anything funny, and you'll get your money as long as the business is what you say it is. So we're both taking risk. If you're lying to us and it ends up, you know, that it's all a house of cards, then you're not going to get any money. But if you are telling us the truth, then we're going to have to pay you. And we'll structure something in that way. But that enables us to get the deal done in 2 or 3 weeks, which means that maybe we can do, you know, a whole load of deals and actually make a difference to saving the jobs. Because every time that a business that's making $500,000 profit ends up in a member's voluntary liquidation, you know, probably 20 people lose their jobs.
Yeah. And then we have that valuation, you agree the valuation. You say, look, if your business is worth, if we do due diligence and we, you know, don't uncover any skeletons, then we're going to pay you X, let's say 2 million or whatever. But we're going to give you a pound today to kind of kickstart the process, and then you'll get paid.
Each one's different. So there's a million ways to skin a cat, but the principle of it is we're not going to do due diligence ever. So we'll do suck it and see. So we'll give you essentially a pound today. Yeah. You can take all the cash that's free cash in the business, and sometimes that's quite a chunk of money, and they'll get that in a very tax beneficial way, and they can take their entrepreneur's relief and do all that kind of stuff. So that's fine. We'll take the core trading asset for a pound, and then we'll agree a price, and that price can be anywhere from essentially net asset value, which is better than an MVL, to, you know, maybe a very small multiple of profit over time. Or quite often, so sometimes what people want is, they say, well, all I want to do is earn 100 grand a year for the next 10 years and for my retirement. So, okay, fine, we'll give you that salary then, or, you know, we'll give you that payment over that period of time. But what we're saying is that rather than doing due diligence, we're just going to get into the business. And if the business is robust and successful, even if it isn't quite as robust and successful as you say, if it's worth our time to keep trading it, we'll pay you. If it isn't worth our time to keep trading it, we're going to MVL it. We're not going to make any money out of it. It will close. It will go into the other camp. There's no upside for the point of the existence. There's no upside for us to do that. There's no motive for us to move it from one to the other. We're gonna do a lot better if we can figure out the business and we want it to be worth trading. So if it's worth trading, you'll get paid. And that's basically what the legals say. There's no wiggle room for us. We can't take a pound out of the business until you're paid. So if it's worth us keeping on essentially earning, working for almost nothing as a team to get to that level, then we'll do it. If it isn't, and that's the judgment for them, isn't it? It's like,
yeah. And so who's going to operate the business?
Oh, we just have, we have a whole load of quasi leaders that come out of, just conscious we didn't do the quasi leader thing before we start press record.
Yeah.
We have a load of people who've come out of corporates. It's interesting. It's a really interesting thing is that there's a trend in private equity to stop asking for investment cash from management teams. And the reason is because they're running out of quasi leaders that come out of corporates who have got any amount of risk appetite. So historically, what they've done is they've said, we'll leverage up a 10 million pound, 20 million pound management buyout. All we want from you is 150 grand. And we'll even lend you the 150 grand, but you have to pay us back the 150 grand. And they'd call it hurt money. It'd typically be about 50 to 100% of salary for the owner managers. They've stopped asking for it because they've essentially run out of people who have the competence to run a business and have even the amount of appetite to risk 100 grand against a possible multi-million pound payoff. Because there just aren't that many of those people, which is, I mean, I'm an owner manager, so I have a way, way more, you know, all of my available cash goes into equities 100% of the time.
Yes.
Which is kind of, but, you know, they've run out of those people, but there are a load of people who are incredibly competent. See, one of the biggest misconceptions that people have is they sit there and they say, I've got an idea and I'm going to back it in an entrepreneurial fashion. Like talking about Retire Today. Like it's a very interesting, Retire Today, Retire Tomorrow is a really interesting idea. And the conventional wisdom is you sit there and say to somebody and say, oh, that's a really good idea. Why are you talking about it? Because somebody else will nick the idea. It's like, no, they won't. They just won't because to deliver that idea, they'd have to take risk. And most people just don't want to take any risk. So loads of people, it's a famous quote from a Japanese car manufacturer. Everybody can listen. Very few people will do. So, yeah, you can talk about all that kind of stuff, but it's the same thing of like, if you invest in a business and the management team figure out how important they are to the business, they'll just walk out of the business and start a competitor. But they won't. Like, tiny percentage of them would. And almost everybody else would just rather, they would way rather get paid £150,000 a year to generate £2 million of profit for somebody else and get a 150 grand bonus at the end of the year. Even if you almost guaranteed them that they'd make the 2 million, most of them would still sit there and take the 150 grand because that's just the way we're wired.
Yeah.
It's what evolutionary biology, I guess.
Yeah. Neil, we've covered a lot there, a lot of really interesting stuff. I think we could do a part two at some point. There's clearly a lot that you want to talk about. So we'll get that in the calendar. But we'll put a link to the quiz that you mentioned when that's ready.
Yep.
And yeah, pleasure to have you on the podcast and wishing you and Precision Corporate Finance all the best with your other brands as well, Retire Today, Retire Tomorrow.
Yeah, super. Thanks, Tom. Great to talk to you.
Cheers.
Cheers, mate. Take care. Bye.
Thanks for listening. As I mentioned at the beginning of the episode, this podcast was created to celebrate the success stories of seven-figure business owners, giving them a platform to share their insights and lessons learned in order to inspire other business owners. As well as that, it's an opportunity to build new connections. So if you're a seven-figure business owner or someone who works with seven-figure business owners and you're looking for introductions to potential stakeholders, strategic partners, and clients, I'd love to hear from you or have you on as a guest and see if I can help make those connections for you. Just go to synergycfosolutions.co. That's synergycfosolutions.co and click podcast. On that page, you'll find the link to apply.